outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of Bavada's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Gen.
Well, welcome from the hot, hot state of California. Not just a heat wave of gigantic proportions last weekend, but also fires that are ravaging the state. 23, I think, major wildfires, a lot more smaller ones all over the state. And a lot of you have been writing me, asking how I'm doing, how's life happening, and what's going on. And man, just to help me process all that today, I've invited my good friend from Bakersfield, California, co-author of A Language of Healing for a Polarized Nation, my friend for 25 plus years, fellow sojourner on this journey, frequent guest on the podcast, Bob Prater. Bob, welcome to the God Journey.
Wayne, what a pleasure it is to be here with you. And right out of the gate, you lay down some interesting topics, don't you?
Oh, well, that's, you know, I'm getting all that email, Facebook posts, whatever, because we've got a summer home where my dad lives and right next to where he is. And it's right in the middle of that huge creek fire, which is one phenomenally freaky fire. It is, you can't imagine how big this is, how much devastation it caused, how quickly it went from nothing to tens of thousands of acres, trapped people all over different, because it's Labor Day weekend, man. There's people trapped all kinds of mountain areas where they couldn't get out because there's only one road in and out of those areas. And they had to overnight, told them to shelter in place when you have a tent in the woods. And the fire bearing down on them. And they told them, you know, if it gets close, get in the lake. Just go to the middle of the lake and tread water as long as you can. And still the air temperature from a fire, even if you're in the lake, it can burn your lungs. And there's a number of people injured. They had to helicopter them out. And that's like 12 miles from where my dad lived. My dad was evacuated at midnight. Some guy, I called him earlier in the day, said, Dad, I think you ought to pack up your car and you ought to go down to the valley and be safe. And he goes, no, I'm going to be fine. I'm up here. Everything's good. And I'm going, Dad, just let me tell you. Put stuff in your car. If you want to wait till somebody bangs on your door, you can do that. But I'm telling you, Dad, it just, you don't know. And it's never, those things never make it to Shaver Lake, and they haven't. My whole life, there's never been a fire there, which only makes it worse, right?
Right.
So now you got plenty of fuel, and we've had all these dead trees from the bug infestation here, you know, a few years ago. So I just said, and he didn't. And then he was evacuated at midnight. Some guy knocks on his door and says, you don't have to leave now, but if I were you, I would leave now. Okay, there's only one road out. It's going to be packed in the morning. So, and Dad did. Finally, he put stuff in his car. And here's my dad. He goes to the valley. He knows lots of people in the valley. He sleeps in his car in a parking lot. It's 92 degrees, I think, is the low that night. And he sleeps in his car until it gets light. Then he calls his son, my brother, and goes over to their house for a while. Oh, my gosh.
So two questions.
Sad. Yeah, go ahead.
How old is your dad?
95.
I don't mean to laugh.
No, laugh.
What?
He's 95. He lives alone, and he's facing the prospect of his entire life being wiped out by this fire.
All right. So he's 95. He has to have his door knocked on to be evacuated. Let's just reset. Okay. Well,
yeah, partly too, because he didn't have electricity all day because the electricity went down. So he's got no phone. He's got a cell phone, but nobody's got the number because he never uses it. So he's got no media. He has no idea there's even a fire. When I called him, he didn't even know about the fire.
Wow.
Yeah.
So 95 years old, living alone up there among all the old growth that is just, I mean, if a fire hits, it's going to be disastrous, and it happens.
It does.
They knock on the door at midnight. Let me just make sure I understand this. A 95-year-old man drives alone down the hill to Fresno, where he's got tons of contacts, but he sleeps in his car.
And he's got a child.
Am I getting the story right so far?
He's got a son there, yes, but he doesn't want to bother anybody.
Okay.
That's
all
my
right.
Dad.
So I just want to make sure. What is your dad's name?
Jake.
Jake. Okay. So Jake sleeps in his car.
Yeah.
What did Jake do for a living his whole life?
He's a farmer. he had a vineyard, grew grapes, made raisins.
I'm telling you, he is that dyed-in-the-wool American John Wayne kind of, I can do it. I mean, is that how you see him?
Oh, definitely. He's a self-sufficient, self-sustaining guy, and he doesn't like to depend on other people. He's very happy to do whatever. I mean, he'll finally ask for help when he can't do anything else. For him, sleeping in a car, no big deal. It's one night, sleep in a car. I don't want to bother anybody. I'll see him tomorrow.
And 95 years old. Let me say it again, 95.
Yeah, and I'm not near that way. We got evacuated 2 years ago in the fire that came through here after the kids were shot at the local bar thing. We got evacuated at 3:30 in the morning, and I called my daughter and said, hey, we're coming over.
Yeah, you didn't even ask.
Well, sort of we asked, but we're coming over. Yeah.
We're going to be there real quick.
And she would have killed me.
Oh my.
If I hadn't. I mean, I texted her one time from the ER when Sarah was in the ER for some health concerns. This was a number of years ago. And I texted, it was 5:30 in the morning. I texted her and said, just want you to know we're at the ER. Things look fine with mom, but blah, blah, blah. And she just, don't you ever text me. My mom is in an emergency room. You call me. I don't care when you wake me up. Yeah, my daughter. That's Julie, boy. You call me. Don't you dare text me at a time like that.
Well, okay. So.
See, so in just one generation, from my dad to my granddaughter. Just very.
Well, yeah, but you have fostered a different dynamic.
Yeah.
For the generation following you than what was fostered with you. And I think it's a positive thing that you've done. But you have to tell me what went through your mind when you heard this. Because did you hear it after the fact? Dad got evacuated at midnight and slept in his car? Or did you know in real time?
No, I didn't know till the next morning, like 10:30, 11. Yeah.
How did that make you feel?
No, it's actually earlier. It's like 8 in the morning. I got up, saw the fire had grown, was bearing down on Shaver Lake. So I called my dad. Oh, here's the other thing. I forgot this part. When I was talking to my dad the first time, his power's out, his phone's out. I'm talking to him on his cell. And when I'm talking to him on his cell, its battery dies.
Oh, gee.
And he's got no way to charge it. So the next morning I get up, I'm going, okay, I'm going to call this. I'm going to hope he's got a phone somehow. And I called his phone and he answered it. And I was surprised. And he goes, yeah, I'm down in Fresno. I said, what are you doing? Yeah, I got evacuated, slept down in the parking lot. Dad, what are you doing? Yeah, that's when I found out.
So, okay. It's so much here. How did it make you feel? I mean, were you upset with him? Were you upset with... what were your emotions?
No, I didn't get upset. That's my dad. Nothing about surprise. I laughed because I'm going, yeah, that's him. You know, if he'd gotten robbed and murdered in that parking lot at night, that'd be a definitely sadder story, but he made it. This is a guy that lived in a foxhole in France, you know, dodging bullets from Germans and told God, if you ever get me out of this, I will never complain about anything again as long as I live. He didn't promise God he'd go in the ministry. He didn't do any of that. So he just said, I will never complain again. Nothing will be as bad as this. And even sleeping in a parking lot at 95 years old at 2 o'clock in the morning is not worse than being in a foxhole in Germany with people shooting at you.
In Fresno in the summer. Let's put it into perspective for everybody that's listening around the world. In the Central Valley in the summer.
Where 95 is the low temperature for the night, not the high for the day. It's the low temperature at night when there's no sun. Yes. That's my dad.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. So he's okay now. He's staying with people now.
Yeah, God's provided him. I put something on Facebook about it. An old friend of our families got a touch with me saying, hey, we've got a little apartment off the side of our house. It's got a kitchen, bathroom, bedroom. It's empty. Dad's welcome to have as long as he needs it. So Dad's over there. Yeah, he's safe.
So it's not enough that during the age of COVID, where we are all concerned for folks of a certain age. I mean, my kids are checking on Danette and I constantly because
you're old. It makes sense.
We're not just old.
My kids never check on me.
We ain't 95 old.
No, you're not.
But we're close to your age. And
I'm getting there.
So we're in our 60s and we have health conditions underlying things that put us as in a vulnerable state. We're not scared of stuff, to be honest with you. But at the same time, they're checking on us every once in a while. And if we do something stupid, my kids are real quick to say, why are you being so stupid? So in the age of COVID, where you're already probably concerned about your dad because things happen. And older people are dying at a higher rate.
Yeah, but he lives alone in the woods and he rarely sees people. So I haven't worried about COVID a lot for him. Yeah. If he gets it, it's probably history, but.
But then here comes fires.
Yeah.
Here comes all the other stuff. How have you been coping with all of this? I mean, from COVID, because I would imagine that there are probably people who wonder, how's our friend Wayne Jacobson, the God Journey guy? What are your thoughts on COVID-19, on where the world is, on how you're dealing with it personally? And then I'd love to jump back into these fires.
Well, you got a dog barking there, I can hear.
Or
is that your bird pretending to be a dog?
My bird does bark.
I know your bird barks. I know.
I have a macaw. Let me just tell you this real quick, because I guarantee you this is going to get a little bit of a chuckle out of some people listening. My bird, who we've had for 25 years, we got him just about the same time that I met you. He has learned all of our names. He learns every pet that we have. He learns their names. He is so smart. And he will call me if I'm not in the room. I'll hear him. He'll say, Bob, Bob. Now, you would think that might just be a thing that they say. You know, maybe it's something they say in the wild, Bob, Bob, but they don't. And if I don't answer, he will switch it up because he has heard Danette say it a million times. And he'll just say a little louder, Robert, until I answer him. So that's my guy.
Is he barking? What you got barking over there? Something.
Oh, that's a little dog. The postman just went by.
And, oh, it sounds yippee.
And, you know, they can feel the vibrations through the floor or something. I have no idea.
Okay, cool.
But so talk to me about COVID and how you have maintained in the midst of how your family has maintained. And what you see?
Well, and just in terms of us navigating it personally, we've quarantined a bit because of some concerns with Sarah's respiratory system, which is sensitive at times. So we've hunkered down quite a bit. We stay pretty well quarantined. We have fellowship with folks who come out and sit in our back patio, and we stay 6 feet, 8 feet apart and have dinner together or whatever and hang out. So we've done some of that. I have not been to an airport since March 10th.
People need to understand how huge of a statement that is coming from you, because how many miles do you fly in a year?
I don't know. I just recently became a million mile flyer on United, and United's not the only airline I fly, but it gave me lifetime status, because I'm not going to get status from this year because we're just not flying. You know, we're not doing any of that. And I could fly. I wouldn't mind flying now in terms of my own safety, but there's no reason to fly. You can't get people together where you go. And that's the reason I fly. So I've been home with Sarah every night for the last 7-8 months. It's a win. It's a win for me, man. My goodness, I have not missed being on the road. There's trips I was going to have that we had to cancel. There's people I'd love to see that I can't see. But I've been making it up with Zoom calls. We've done quite a bit of podcasting. I mean, I've been doing more of that. We're kind of getting some new publishing ventures now, which are going to be I'm very excited about, but not ready to talk about. So this has been like a sabbatical. First part of it wasn't. First part was crazy. Taught that class for my grandkids, and it just seemed like, man, it was so much coming at me. Right now, there's more space to process some things, make some changes on the website, make some changes to some of my older material still being accessible to people. And some new projects on the road. So that's all good for me.
Right.
Where I see the COVID thing as a whole, it's just one of those things that runs through humanity every so many years. It just is. New diseases get into the bloodstream. There's no immunity and people got to navigate it. And I think we have navigated this whole thing so poorly. I do. I think in past
time. Why would you say that?
Just the way everything got shut down, we were told initially masks are not helpful. I think there's a lot of us that feel like if you had just put masks on everybody and did the social distancing, you didn't have to completely close the economy down. You just didn't have to do it. It was somehow this fear in our 21st century culture that if anybody dies from anything, it's a bad thing. And so we're trying to keep everyone safe from every possible occurrence. And Life reminds, this fire reminds us, you're not in control of anything. My gosh, this creation is out of sync with its creator. And whether it's fires or earthquakes or pandemics or whatever, the creation is existing in this frustration because we, the disobedient sons of humanity and daughters, have subjected it to futility. The creation is waiting for a better day. And I'm rooting with creation. I'm with creation on this. I don't think, when I think of the devastation of the beauty of God in that area where I've grown up and vacationed as a child, took my children in vacation, camped there, hiked there, fished there, swam there, skied there. I mean, that's just the most renewing place on the planet I can go. And to think of it being absolutely devastated by wildfire, I mean, that hurts my heart. It's not the homes. It's not, you know, it's not none of that. People say, oh, you got losing a child at home. No, we never had a home up there till mom and dad moved up there a few years back, 25 years ago, actually. But it's not the homes that's sentimental. It's the beauty of that area. And now the devastation of all those people. And the homes they've lost, the business that they've lost, the economy that that area is going to lose for a long time to come. And it's heartbreaking. That part is heartbreaking to me.
Yeah, I would completely, well, mostly agree. I mean, I may not have the same, I could push back a little bit on the way you're viewing COVID, but.
Go ahead. What would you say differently?
But
don't call me a butt.
The upshot of this is people are suffering.
Yes.
People are in pain. And in some cases, people are dying. So, you know, the rest of it is all, you know, the beauty of creation and things being destroyed and all of that, which is heartbreaking. But more heartbreaking than that is, you know, my friend who has a hair salon that has just about lost everything.
Sure.
You know, I do work for a local movie theater. They've been closed since March. And they're probably not going to make it.
Yeah.
They still have not reopened because Kern County is not one of those where they can reopen yet. And if they do, it's at like 25% of capacity.
Right.
So my heart breaks for those who are losing livelihoods, all of that. Where I would push back on the COVID stuff is simply if we still have 190,000 deaths as of today. Yeah. Somewhere in there, roughly.
Right.
And that's with social distancing and a lot of masking. If we had not had that, and I mean, this could have gone so much worse. But 190,000 is still a big number, and it's not done. We don't know what happens when the weather becomes cold. So, you know, yeah, I think we handled it abysmally as well, just from a slightly different perspective, I guess.
Yeah.
But you and I are always a little, even in the book, we talk about the fact that I, you know, politically, I'm maybe a little more progressive than you. And I don't use progressive as better. I mean, progressive as in more liberal. And so I always look at things through a slightly different lens.
Yeah, than Wayne. You definitely are. And that's fine. That's why I don't mind people talking about it differently and seeing it differently. I just think even now we've got people arguing over whether wearing a mask is a good idea.
Oh, my gosh.
That's what, you know, and they're fighting for their rights not to wear a mask, or they're fighting for their rights to meet in their church on Sunday morning, and they can't close down churches and still have massage parlors open, which they don't, or pot shops or whatever. You know, and there's all that complaint and pushback, which is just difficult because we could make the smaller choices that impact our culture less if we would cooperate together. And that's what we haven't done. And then the government lying to us about the masks, just saying they're not helpful. In fact, they'll make it worse. And everybody believes that. But they were doing that just to hoard the masks for the medical people. And then it created this idea in the culture that the mask is just a game they're playing. It's not a real help in this crisis. And I think our government has handled this incredibly poorly.
Well, how about the church? I mean, you mentioned churches. Churches being closed while massage parlors, which we both know are not open.
No, but pot shops and some of those
pot shops are.
Yeah, because masses of people, particularly that are singing or shouting, are super spreader events. That's how this thing spreads. It aerializes into aerosol. And the worst environment is to be at a concert. And that's what I, you know, what's an athletic contest, concert. And these pastors that are fighting, because we've got to have, it's our God-given right. You don't have the right to take this constitutional right away from us to gather. I'm going, oh my gosh, it's not about your freedom of religion.
No.
It's like if you showed up to your church and the deputy sheriff sitting there with a guard at the front door and says, well, we're going to meet today. He says, you know, there's a bomb in there. We had a bomb threat. We've checked it out. The bomb squad's coming. We're not letting you people in there today. And the pastor goes, it's our God-given right to meet. And I just go, this is so stupid because it isn't that. But I understand the fear. I saw an article this weekend from AP, Associated Press. And this is out of Africa. The title was, As COVID-19 Cases Rise, Faith is Put to the Test. And a lot of what he's quoting here are mega church leaders throughout. If you don't know this, if you want to search the 10 highest paid pastors on the planet, go ahead, and you'll find a list of pastors making $12 million, $11 million, and they're all in Nigeria and Kenya and these places that are impoverished, but these guys teach a prosperity gospel, suck in the money like nobody's business, and that's kind of who they're interviewing here. But the concern is throughout the whole thing, from Nigeria to Uganda to South Africa to Tanzania, the discussion is always, they can't make us stop. We've got to be together. If we're not together and if we're together praying, that's a better protection against the virus than wearing masks and not being together. And so they've got this whole faith thing askew, but a couple of them flat out admit that financially we can't make it if people don't come here. And so they're trying to send your tithe, even if you can't come and meet. And the fear is twofold. One, the finances will stop flowing. And when you're living on $12 million a year, that's obviously a threat to your livelihood. And the second one is people will get used to not meeting. And they may not come back when this is all over. Right. And so those two fears, which I think are the same fears that go on in the States, I think we're less honest about it. We've got the First Amendment, so we can say this is really a First Amendment issue and I have the right to meet. But right. The fact is the same thing. We're concerned about our financial inflow because it's not there. You got these huge buildings that we only use it one day a week anyway. And now we're not using them any days of the week.
Nope.
And large overhead with staff and people not coming are probably not giving at the same level because that economic model is a lot based on passing an offering plate. So people feel guilty if they're not putting anything in. Well, now you're kind of, guilt-free Sundays. You're not guilty about not going and you're not guilty about not giving. And now you're going to live on a different set of dollars and participation than you've lived when guilt has been the commodity you trade in. I remember someone sent me an article years ago from a church bulletin. The front of it was finally guilt-free Sundays. And I'm going, well, that's interesting. And you know what it's about? They've started a Saturday night service. So you can get your commitment out of the way on Saturday night. And now you can. We still want you having a guilty weekend somewhere. But you can get out of the way on Saturday. Isn't that sad?
Goodness. There is a documentary series on HBO right now called The Vow. And it is insane and creepy. It's all about this cult that was in New York called Nivium, or however they say it. But it was a sex cult where they were branding some of the women. And it was big news when it went. But one of the things that they did as you moved up higher, and they had a hierarchy of sashes that had stripes on them, you move from level to level to level. But as you move to a new level, they ask for collateral. We need collateral from you. And what they meant by collateral is tell us something that you never want anyone to know so that we can hold your feet to the fire on the vow you made to us.
Wow.
Or women, take off your clothes, take a picture and send it to us. No one will ever see it, but it's collateral.
As long as you cooperate, they won't see.
As long as you cooperate, no one will ever know.
And the leaders are passing it around even before then.
Of course. Right?
Yeah, because what's always involved, and this we'll talk about this in a future podcast. I don't want to get into it here, but the whole Falwell fall. Mm. Almost always, sexual perversion travels in higher levels of authority and celebrity and awe, almost always.
Right.
And so everybody's always surprised when something like this goes bad, but that's the same thing. And even just how you put different stripes on your clothes or whatever, so you have the cachet of your authority level, That's no different than the Roman Catholic Church, right?
Not really.
Whether you're a priest or a bishop or an archbishop or pope, you've got a certain dress. So when you're in the room, everybody knows who you are and how to treat right. you. And yeah, oh, it's so sad.
But it just reminded me when you said guilt-free Sundays. So I remember at the beginning of, and let's just call it pandemic, at the beginning of pandemic, you and I had a conversation about the misappropriation of Psalm 91. You remember that?
I do, sure.
It feels like a lifetime ago, by the way, doesn't it?
Not to me. People say that. I'm going, no, it just seems
it
like
does it does to me. It yeah, feels like this has just been going on and on and on, and I'm not complaining about it.
Right.
Because I'm one of those guys that believes in the sovereignty of God, that he could have placed us at any point on the timeline in history, mm-hmm. and he chose to place us here. So every morning I wake up and ask the same question. What are we doing today? Because I'm here for a purpose. I'm here for a reason.
Sure.
So I remember that conversation, and I've heard people, I've had people invite me to gatherings, and when I refused and said, I don't think that's wise, because there weren't going to be masks or distancing, well, brother, you don't understand the blood of Jesus, do you? We're covered by the blood of Jesus. I said, if I'm hearing you correctly, no one who identifies with Jesus has died. Well, I didn't say that.
Or been sick of the COVID.
Right. I didn't say that.
Or had their house burn in a fire.
Or had, yeah, because bad things couldn't possibly happen to God's kids, right? But they do.
Isn't that the presumption of, jump off the temple and God will not let you be hurt because you're the protector? That's the same thing. Scripture says so. And now you're moving from trust in what God's doing to presumption of what I want done. Like the prayers I've had from my dad's house and my house, we're going to pray the fire goes another direction. I'm like, hold on a minute. You're going to do what? Because, yeah, I mean, I would love it for it to go another direction, but it's destroying other people over there. It's not going another direction, like into the wilderness. And so how do you pray in times of crisis like that? I mean, do you pray that all the righteous people will be unsick and fine? Do you pray? I mean, what's the prayer? Or like people, I had somebody write me today and said, and it's an older lady, and I don't want to diss on her. I hope she has listened to the podcast. She means well, but she said, I'm praying for rain. Why not snow? If God can calm the storm, he can produce rain. Yippee! And she's talking about the fire. Like, I'm going to pray it rains today. Well, if you live in California in early September, there is zero chance. I know snow. No. Denver got snow yesterday. I know that. My son lives there. But right. there's not a chance it's going to rain up there today. It's not a chance. And you can pray. I mean, Elijah did. But these are not presumptive things we decide we want. These are things that God calls into being. And we can call it into being with him
right.
when he's doing it.
Right.
But I have not once prayed, and as we sit here and record this, I don't know if my home, my dad's home, is still standing. We have no idea.
You don't know.
We do not know for sure. Yesterday, it looked like they had been burned. We're getting reports today that they have not, that they're still there. But all of this changes every hour. So we don't know. But I've not once prayed, oh, God, protect our home. Oh, God, protect our home. I'm praying, God, intervene in this for so many people, losing jobs, losing homes, losing businesses. Right. Now it's burning into cities, larger towns in the valley. And man, my heart is that and the devastation of the creation. And so my prayers are there. I'm not praying for rain. I'm not praying intently that God protect my home. I feel like this is an adventure with God. So if this is destroyed, this place my family goes for to in the summer and a place we enjoy so much. And we've had 60 plus years of being every summer up in those mountains.
Wow.
If that ends for now or forever, I have all those memories. They're still valuable, wonderful. I've not lost a moment's night's sleep. I've not been nervous about it. Come or go. If God sees fit, and I don't think God's even doing it. So if it's the course of creation right now that our home's destroyed along with a bunch of others, well, then we're going to see what God has beyond that.
Oh, I like that.
But I've not had the tension of, oh my gosh, you've got to protect it. My whole life will be in ruin. Granted, it's insured. Granted, there's not a great calamity coming. If it's a hassle, it's a nightmare. I hate that it's there. I hate that it's in a lovely part of the world. We see a picture of the lake that's got 4 inches of ash on top of it, and the ducks just thrashing, trying to find something to eat. I mean, I can't imagine how many animals have been killed in this. Fortunately, I think only one person has been killed so far, though people have been injured. But my heart, I'm at rest in the way God works through circumstances. You want me to pray something specific? I'm in. God, show me, and I will be in on it with you and watch what happens. But I'm not, and this is a change for me, because I think 42 years of my life, 90% of my prayers were motivated out of my fears and anxieties.
Of course.
And I don't think in the last 20 or so years, they're motivated much out of that. Even when I've gotten stranded flying and planes not working out, whatever, I've sat there and just said, okay, God, you've got another adventure. Where the Wayne of old would have just been, oh, God, I come out here and do this for you, and you don't even give me a plane to go home on. And I was the most obnoxious, angry, life needs to go exactly my way or God's failing me kind of approach. And it's brought me back, even this situation, to the man I helped deal with his wife's death last summer, and did a series of emails about our email exchange. He's believing his wife to live. He feels like that's really his belief. God's given it to him, and he completely believes, and she dies. So now faith has failed. God has failed. And I've thought about him, and I've thought about that situation, and I've thought about this going, you know what? I don't know. I'm not promised 84 years with Sarah. I'm not promised a place in the mountains. My dad, if he loses everything at 95, well, he'll have a simpler life for the next however long he's living. Whether he comes live with us, whether one of the other brothers, or gets an apartment in Fresno. I mean, and he said, you know, if the house is gone, I'm not rebuilding. I'm not rebuilding up there.
Oh, wow.
And I said, I don't know if this is true, but somebody told me, you know, if you don't rebuild the house, it gets burned down. You don't get the insurance money. The insurance money is to rebuild. It's not just here's your insurance money. And I don't know if that's true or not. Somebody knows that can tell me. But I'm just going, oh my gosh, you have, because I don't know that I would rebuild either. I just,
right.
Yeah, I just giving the insurance money, we'll sell the lot and get on with life.
Yeah.
But so we don't know. All that's uncertain, but
it's interesting that the person that wrote you and said, I'm praying for rain and maybe even snow because God is God. You know, somewhere I read, it rains on the just and the unjust. And
was that in War and Peace, or what was that?
If that
no, it was
in
the Bible.
If that's the case, fires can take the homes of the just and the unjust. And we don't pray that the fire goes somewhere else and takes someone else. I mean, it's just not how God works. It's not how heaven works.
And yet many people think it does, because I remember when Pat Robertson on 700 Club was praying against this hurricane that was going to come ashore at Virginia Beach. And they prayed hard, and it actually turned northward and came ashore up in New Jersey or something. And they were talking about how great it was. They had this victory. And I'm thinking, that's just the most absurd prayer I've ever heard. And people ask them, well, what about the folks in New Jersey? Well, if they had prayed harder, might have gone to New York. You know, it's just cavalier. Yeah. It really is an egocentric faith, and I put faith in air quotes. It's an egocentric. Whatever's good for me is good for God, and I don't care about its impact on others. I cannot process the fire at Shaver Lake by looking at me and my dad alone. I can't.
No. And you know what's crazy?
And I don't want to.
1 minute ago, I got a text from a dear one that used to be with us. It's a young couple that used to be in our home church here. And they now live in Grants Pass, Oregon. And the message said, please pray for us. We were just evacuated from our homes because of the fire. So hey, this thing is up and down. I don't know if people know this, but this thing is up and down the West Coast. It's California, Oregon, and Washington are all on fire right now.
Yeah, it's not the same fire. There's a whole bunch of fires.
Just all these fires.
Some are lightning strikes. One was caused by a gender reveal party. Can you imagine how silly that is? Oh, my gosh. I'm sure those people deeply regret it, but my goodness, you can't take pyrotechnics out into a dry wasteland. And oh, my gosh.
In September in California. And again, you know, I saw somebody that is like the mother of gender reveal parties. And she said, people, we need to stop this nonsense. And that's the person that kind of invented it.
Yes, no kidding.
So here we go.
We do need to stop it, for sure.
Well, we do know that God is good. He is still on the throne. He is not, he is, his arm is not short, and his power is not limited. And so we do continue to pray for relief. We pray that he would move with intent upon the fires, upon COVID, upon our land. But beyond all of that, I pray for healing for us, for the church, for people, for this nation. Because to me, that's way bigger than anything that's happening right now. This is all temporary. What's happening with the polarization in our country is it's long term, and it just continues on.
When you look at 2020 being such a horrific year, even before these fires in California, which are so destructive, just the virus, injustice, the polarization over racial issues right now in our country, it's just a horrific year in every way the year could be measured. And yet these give us opportunities. We talked last week, Kyle and I did, about that the need to control causes us to do things. And even when we become a Christian now, we've got God on our side to help us control the outcomes we want. And I really think this journey is about letting go of outcomes. It really is. It's, yeah, I'll pray when God asks me to pray, and I'll let him know my desires. I always do that. But God is not my little fairy godmother to get every situation to conform to the way that serves Wayne best. And these times of national catastrophe and pain needs to open our hearts wider, not just for ourselves, but for other people that are being impacted by these things, and to care and to cry out before God in repentance that says, God, we have not honored you. We've not honored your ways. And how can we live inside your reality? And then as your circumstances change, realize you're just being invited on a different adventure. It's not, oh, my whole life is ruined. Everything I've wanted is gone. I've watched friends go through bankruptcy, death of spouses, death of, and I get how tragically horrific those things are. They are. But God doesn't stop being God in those things.
Not at all.
And God doesn't always fix those things before they happen. Sometimes he does, but I'd say most times he doesn't. There's an ability for God's grace. Well, the tagline we put to the shack, triumph out of tragedy. Mm. That to me is just resounds. I think that was my idea in the end. Triumph out of tragedy, to realize that God's just not only in the good stuff. God's present, not causing the bad stuff, but his presence is still in the bad stuff. And through that opens up a different adventure. If my life circumstances change, when tragedy comes, if I can get into that space, okay, God, where are you inviting me to go now? My life was never about this planet. It wasn't about here. It wasn't about what I can accumulate, what I should have when I, you know, it's none of that. It's about how am I following him through the twists and turns of this journey?
That's it.
Hopefully in all of it, being shaped to be more like him, being more at rest in his love, more compassionate for others around me, wiser about the way I respond to situations. And that's the journey I'm on. And I feel like I'm just at the trailhead. I feel like that journey is so much more for me to learn and be part of here. But I love the fact that anxious Wayne, and that's been a big deal in my life through most of it, hasn't lost 1 minute of sleep to this fire. I haven't lost a minute of sleep for what does this mean for my dad? I don't know, but we'll be in it with my dad to figure it out. We just will. And God will show himself. And at the end of it, we'll go, man, isn't God amazing how he keeps rescuing us out of all the places we could get lost? And I love that.
That's like the new Coke. It's the new Wayne. And
the new Coke sucks. The new Coke is so bad. Come on. That's not
terrible. But the new Wayne is pretty darn good. And you know, and I know we've got a wrap, but we have to find the ability to live in the tension between understanding the supernatural aspect of who God is and what he can do, and yet we live on this earth.
Yeah.
And so we've got to find that tension where we continue to have faith that God can, but we realize where we are.
And I think if you have a responsiveness to God, a sensitivity to how God leads and guides, you're more at rest with that. If you don't have that, then it's all I've left with is, I know what I want, and I'm going to beg God, plead God to try and get out of him, and then I'm going to be disappointed when I don't get it. I'm going to be crushed, or some do that. Some, like David, they pray their hearts out, and then when the kid dies, they just get up and go, oh, well, I did my best shot. Okay. I don't know if that's the answer either. I do think it's easier to trust God. Not if you hear him perfectly, because no one does.
Nope.
But if you have enough of, okay, I sense when God's leading and opening doors. I sense that beyond this tragedy, God will have a way to go forward, because he always does.
Yeah, he does.
I've never known somebody through the worst of tragedy didn't have a way on the other side for God to open doors, lead them on, still do his work in them. Because I think he's just amazing in the creation. And he called us to be followers of his, not just we're left to our own and how can we manipulate God to get what we want out of it, but just let times of tragedy soften our hearts to say, okay, God, what do you want now from me? Where can I live in you right here? And how can I help other people around me? And so, yeah, COVID and fires and you know what? It's just another day in 2020.
It really is, isn't it?
No one's going to mind seeing this year go away unless 2021 is worse, you know, and you don't know about that. But
this don't know about that. And you know what? And this one hasn't been all bad, because it's opportunities for us to be better.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.